Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode, I'll be interviewing the folks behind the sci-fi online game America 2049. Also, a would-be anti-choice terrorist is arrested before he can act, and the right-wing media tries to concoct an evidence-free Democratic sex scandal in retaliation for repeated Republican sex scandals. Scarlett Johansson did a video standing by Planned Parenthood. It's pretty standard stuff, but I'm linking it because, yay, good for Scarlett Johansson.
A cancer that goes undetected. A sexually transmitted disease left untreated. A woman unable to get the birth control she needs to plan her family and take control of her own destiny. This is the disastrous vision of some leaders in the United States House of Representatives. The House passed a bill to eliminate our country's family planning program and to stop Planned Parenthood health centers from receiving any federal money to provide life-saving preventative care.
Naturally, the existence of an incredibly sexy woman who doesn't apologize for herself set off anti-choicers, who made some rather mean-spirited and frankly uninspired so-called parodies, which you can check out at the link. Last Tuesday was the second anniversary of the brutal assassination of Dr. George Tiller by an anti-choice nut. It was a time of remembrance and grieving, but also of asking the hard questions about whether or not enough is being done to prevent future anti-choice terrorist attacks. It's a particularly troubling question as the week before the anniversary, a man was arrested in Wisconsin for plotting to murder a doctor and quite possibly other clinic workers.
Some breaking news this evening out of Madison, Wisconsin. The Wisconsin State Journal reporting that a man was arrested last night after he allegedly told police he was in Madison to kill an abortion doctor. The suspect is named Ralph Lang. He's a 63-year-old man from Marshfield, Wisconsin. He told a police officer at a Motel 6 in Madison that he had a gun to, quote, lay out abortionists because they are killing babies. Quoting from the Wisconsin State Journal now, Mr. Lang said he planned on shooting the clinic's doctor right in the head, according to a complaint filed today in U.S. District Court. Asked if he planned to shoot just the doctors or nurses too, Lang replied he wished he could line them all up in a row, get a machine gun, and mow them all down.
What's especially alarming about this particular situation is that the man was only caught because he was playing with his gun in his hotel room and it discharged accidentally. If he hadn't done that, there's a chance he could have gotten to a clinic worker and murdered them. As usual, Rachel Maddow is the only cable news show giving this story the attention it deserves, and as usual, she and her staff get right to the meat of the problem.
Mr. Lang had been arrested at the Madison Planned Parenthood before, 3.5 years earlier. During that arrest, he told a Madison police officer that the Bible states that anyone involved in abortion should be executed. Mr. Lang said at the time that everyone in that building should be executed and that police officers were not fulfilling their jobs by not executing the individuals involved in the abortion clinic. This past Wednesday, after he had accidentally shot those holes through the hotel room doors, Ralph Lang told the Madison police officer who responded to the scene, quote, I bought the gun to help end abortion. He also explained that he had bought the gun after that old arrest a few years ago at the Planned Parenthood clinic.
This time around, under the Obama administration, federal charges are being filed along with state charges under the FACE Act. This act was basically not enforced under the Bush administration. But we know for a fact that most anti-choice terrorists start off small, working up to bigger acts of violence. They block a clinic here, vandalize a clinic there, work up to setting fires, and then they cross the line into bombing or shooting. If they were arrested and had the book thrown at them for the smaller violation, it's possible that you could thwart the scarier acts of violence. After all, the people who end up trying to shoot doctors would either be so scared by their stint in jail or, you know, actually in jail, and that might prevent future attacks. David Pakman also looked at the media picture here, where anti-choice and right-wing terrorism overall are being downplayed in the media, which can help embolden said terrorists. After noting that Lang was arrested in 2007 for threatening terrorist attacks on abortion providers, David said this.
You know what's unbelievable about this, ladies and gentlemen? Imagine if the underwear bomber had attempted an underwear bombing, or rather, had been arrested for something related to a bombing like that in 2007. Would we not know about him now? Would this not have been wall-to-wall coverage much more than it was when he was actually taken off of that plane? This is a man who in 07 was already arrested for planning to murder anyone involved in abortions, and now he's back. And no, but I guarantee you 99.9% of our audience will never have heard of Robert Lang before today. So this, to me, this guy's not any less crazy than the underwear bomber. Barely a mention of this in mainstream media, barely a mention in conservative media. We hear the same lone gunman talk. We hear the same isolated incident.
This is no small thing either. One thing we know about domestic terrorists is that they often feel they have the support of the community. This is because they do have the support of the people around them who share their radical views, but also because they don't get enough pushback from people who don't. When the media doesn't cover right-wing terrorism as terrorism, it gives terrorists more room to think they're mainstream, supported, and justified. Giving the same kind of national coverage to domestic terrorists as foreign terrorists sends the message that most of America does not approve of terrorism, even if the terrorists are Christian-identified and American-born. The good news here is not just that Lang was thwarted, but unlike in years past, the Department of Justice is doing its job and treating this as a federal crime instead of just leaving it to the local authorities. Of course, when they pushed against Angel Dillard of Kansas for similar threats to murder a doctor, the judge refused the restraining order that the DOJ asked for. Maybe they'll have better luck this time, especially since we have a discharged weapon to add some gravity to the situation. I'd like to welcome Malika Dutt and Harold Perrineau to the program. Malika is the president and CEO of Breakthrough, a human rights organization that uses the power of pop culture to inspire people to take action for human rights and human dignity. Harold is an actor whose most famous role was Michael on Lost, and they're here today to talk about a project they're working on together called America 2049. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Harold and Malika.
Great to be here.
So let's start with the basics. What is America 2049?
So America 2049 is a Facebook game with a bunch of transmedia elements that Breakthrough created to really create a dialogue about some of the current issues that are facing us as a country today. So the idea of America in the year 2049 is to really shed light on issues like human trafficking, sexuality, race, migration, labor, and get us to understand that we are going to have to make some serious efforts to change things now if we don't want a dystopic future, a future that is full of all kinds of problems in the future.
And America 2049 is a Facebook game instead of a more traditional online kind of PC game. Why did you go with Facebook as why did you go for Facebook as an interface instead of the more traditional kind of gaming?
Well, you know, Facebook's really emerged as a platform that has millions and millions of people on it. The last we checked, there were about 550 million users, and 250 million of them are sort of on it every day. And we wanted a platform that really allowed us to reach people in the largest way possible. But also, we wanted to deploy the Facebook tools that allow threads, conversations, the whole public forum aspect to really reveal itself so that, you know, you're playing the game, but you're also playing the game as part of a larger community. And the way we set it up is that we launched America 2049 as a 12-week rollout, after which it'll be on Facebook and you can play it anytime. But in these 12 weeks, every week, we focus on a particular theme. So for example, in week two, we looked at the question of human trafficking. You're an agent and you are trying to catch a fugitive on behalf of the Council on American Heritage. And in the gameplay, you get clues which basically teach you about American history. And in the Human Trafficking Week, we also partnered with the Hull House Museum in Chicago, which then had a live, you know, a panel discussion and a big, big conversation about sex work, trafficking, and all of the issues that we're currently debating, both from a historical perspective, but then also in terms of, you know, where is the future taking us? And that's what's really exciting about this game is that, you know, every week you're in a different part of the country, you're dealing with a different issue. We were in New York when we were dealing with labor issues, so we partnered with the Tenement Museum, and there's 8 different cultural sites that are on board as well. So I think what's really unique about this game, it's really the first of its kind where it marries the Facebook interface with real actual cultural events on the ground to really get this dialogue going.
What drew you to this project, Harold?
You know, I don't know a lot about gaming, but I know that when Bridget Evans gave me a call and asked me if I wanted to participate in this new type of online game, and that what they would in the game they tackle you know, a number of social issues in this sort of hypothetical way, it sounds like a really exciting thing for me to be part of. I wanted to be part of this conversation that actually talked about some of the things that are going on in our country and where that could possibly lead us. I'm not saying that my point of view is right, but I think there is a big conversation to be had there. And sometimes, you know, if you find a way to entertain people, you can have that conversation and it not feel so heavy or people won't feel so like they have to be exactly right. I just wanted to be part of that kind of thing, this new way of doing that.
And what issues about from the video game do you feel are some of the ones that have been most interesting to you?
One of the things I always have a real interest in is the way we consider sexual preference. And to me, you know, being an African-American male, you know, it wasn't too long ago when, you know, if I married someone who looked like my wife, it would have been illegal. So it's always been one of those very, you know, when we had all this stuff about Proposition, in California it was Proposition 81 about same-sex marriages. I was really fascinated when it was still illegal, like that it didn't pass. And I was fascinated by, you know, the people who decided like, no, this isn't the right thing, you know. So I know that's a big issue in America 2049. Also, you know, how we treat people immigrating to this country and based on fears and theories and not always the truth about what diseases they may or may not have and who we decide that it's okay to think that about. I think it's really, really, really interesting. So I think it's a great conversation to be had.
So I guess one last question. What are some of your goals with this project?
My one big goal is just to open up the dialogue. I mean, I know the dialogue is open. I know there are people talking about it. I know that there, even when I'm talking to you about it, I think I talk too heavily about it. So it makes it too precious, you know. The goal is to actually just have this conversation. I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if other people are right. I know that I love living in this country. I know that there are some amazing things. I've been, you know, around the world, and this is where I'd love to live. But I know that some things, you know, we have to deal with and have to fix and have to talk about. And so, you know, I'm just hoping that we continue talking about them. And I'm glad, like, as a country, like, we're moving forward with the president that we have. And I was really disappointed with our last president and sort of the policies and, you know, I live in this country. And so that's sometimes I'm going to like it and sometimes I'm not. And so I'm just hoping that we continue to open up a dialogue. And I hope that there are some, you know, shifts and changes in certain kind of in the way people see other people. We all need each other to live here. And looking at each other as the enemy is just, I don't think that that's going to get us where we're going to go. So I just hope we just keep talking about that in a real and a positive way.
Well, you know, what's happening in America 2049 is that our human rights in almost every area are being compromised. And certainly in the area of abortion, we're facing that as a country and as women right now. So in the gameplay in 2049, you're dealing with the reality of what happens to people if abortion is outlawed and the kinds of very serious health risks as well as the criminalization of individuals, of people who need access to those services, like what that actually looks like. In the game, we're also dealing with broader issues of reproductive health. We're talking about issues of sexuality, of lesbian and gay rights. We're looking at the whole issue of choice in marriage, both from the interracial point of view as well as from the point of view of same-sex marriage, or really just the right to be with the person you love. So, you know, reproductive health issues, I think, are one of the critical crossroads issues for the 21st century. Women all over the world, including in the United States, are facing these challenges. And so in the gameplay, you discover what happens when the rights that we thought we had are taken away.
And so I guess one last final question. What are your goals with this project?
You know, what we really want people to understand is two things. One is that we're all in this together. This game is about multiple issues as they relate to one another, because we want people to build bridges. We want people to build bridges across our many different identities, across the many different issues that affect our lives, because we experience them actually as a complete whole. And so in America 2049, you're taking a human rights journey where you are interfacing with labor and reproductive rights and sexuality and immigration and racial justice. And that's a really important goal in the game. The second thing that we really want people to understand is that the game is about the future. We're using history to talk about what's going on in the future, but really it's about us at a crossroads. What are the kinds of decisions that we're going to take as a country? What are the kinds of decisions we're going to take as individuals? And who do we want to be? What are the values that we want to live by?
My guests today have been Malika Dutt and Harold Perrineau. And the game is called America 2049. If you want to play, it's easy to find on Facebook, and it merges neatly into your own Facebook account. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Malika and Harold.
Thank you.
A New York congressman is outed for sending a lewd picture to a woman over a social network. First, gossipy online sources cover it, and then it trickles into the mainstream media. The congressman, abashed, resigns before the scandal gets out of hand. Oh, wait. You probably thought I was talking about Representative Anthony Weiner, who represents part of Brooklyn and Queens. At least until I started talking about the resignation. No, I was actually talking about Representative Chris Lee, a Republican from upstate New York. He really did send a picture of himself half naked to a woman, and she outed him to Gawker, and he resigned. But after he resigned, his seat was up for grabs, and a Democrat won the seat in a special election, even though that seat has been solidly Republican since roughly forever. Republicans lost the seat on Tuesday, and within half a week after that loss, and what is almost surely just a total coincidence, nothing to see here, conservative bloggers started to claim that the most famous Democratic congressman from New York had done exactly the same thing. And they had an easy-to-fake screenshot to prove it. Oh yeah, and the testimony of a single witness who, in another one of those remarkable coincidences, just happens to be a right-wing ideologue who spends a lot of time on Twitter obsessing over his hatred of Anthony Weiner. Despite all of this, obviously rock-solid proof, Weiner is denying that he sent a picture of an erect penis with no identifying details to a young woman who follows him on Twitter.
Well, Congressman Anthony Weiner says that he has no plans to involve police in searching for the hacker who violated his Twitter account. He also says that the lewd photo that was sent to a co-ed under his name is someone's bad idea of a prank.
It's a distraction. Look, you know, you've got the Republicans who are playing games with the debt limit. You've got a Supreme Court justice who is refusing to recuse himself despite conflicts of interest. You have a health care act that is under siege. You know, this is a distraction. I get it. You know, I was hacked. It happens to people. You move on.
Well, Congressman Weiner is still using the Twitter account. He has hired an attorney to look into the incident.
Can we please retire the word co-ed yet? It exists only for one reason, which is to make sexual insinuations about young women who go to college. Every time I hear the word, I have to assume the person using it believes that it's scandalous to allow unmarried women to live away from their parents. Seriously, people, grow up. Not completely convinced yet that this story is the real deal and that there's rock-solid proof that Congressman Weiner is having an affair with a college girl who lives 3,000 miles away from him? Well, let's consider who the number one accuser is. You guessed it. Andrew Breitbart, known the world over for his honesty, integrity, and ability to comb his hair every time he goes in front of cameras to offer his sober-minded assessment of the issues of the day. This is how Breitbart explained the situation.
We have that exclusive at biggovernment.com right now, but he's been monitoring Rep. Weiner for quite some time now because, according to his theory, and I don't know him that well, he's been monitoring relationships that Congressman Weiner has been having with women, young women who claim to have relationships with him. I'm not saying what type of relationships, but people that Rep. Weiner follows, girls that are quite young, younger than the girl in question here, talk openly about Rep. Weiner, mm-hmm. who he follows these girls. So
all
that's
right.
Where
those are definitely
what he's dancing around is that the girl in question jokingly called Weiner her boyfriend once in a tweet, which set off the angry Twitter weirdo who has supposedly broken this story. By the way, that's actually an internet meme. Women of all ages and political leanings jokingly call famous men their boyfriends. I've tweeted in the past about my boyfriend Anderson Cooper, my boyfriend Nathan Fillion, and my boyfriend Quentin Tarantino. I have not actually met any of these men, much less had affairs with them. But hey, I'm also not 21, so I'm not attracting the lascivious attention of right-wing nut jobs who want to assume that every college girl is having sex with every man in sight. I will also point out that Breitbart's insinuation here that having someone in your social network automatically implicates you as someone who has exchanged bodily fluids. With that in mind, I checked out Breitbart's Twitter feed and discovered that he has 41,000 followers. By his own estimation, he gets around more than Wilt Chamberlain. Breitbart, for those who don't remember, was also instrumental in distributing the Acorn videos where James O'Keefe and Hannah Giles claimed they caught Acorn employees abetting sex trafficking, when in fact they just edited videos to make it appear that innocent people were doing things that they weren't. Breitbart also helped push Lila Rose videos when she did the same thing to Planned Parenthood. Breitbart published a video of Department of Agriculture employee Shirley Sherrod, where it appeared Sherrod was saying racist things about white people. It turned out that she was actually denouncing racism against white people, but it had been edited to change the meaning of her words. By the way, Breitbart has done more than follow young sexy woman Lila Rose on Twitter, but he actually has a working relationship with her. By his own standards, I think then that's enough to start a torrid rumor about them. Unfortunately, Weiner's annoyance at this was taken to mean that he's being dismissive.
You know, look, I'm not going to talk about this anymore. You know, I think that if I was giving a speech to 45,000 people and someone stood up and heckled in the back, I wouldn't spend 3 days talking to him. I'm going to get back to the conversation I care about. You know, we have a debt limit vote tonight that really puts the economy of our country in peril. We have a Supreme Court justice who I believe is conflicted and is not recusing himself from the health care vote. We have a lot of challenges to face, and I'm going to get back to work today.
Well, why did you hire a lawyer? Why not let law enforcement just handle this?
You know, put out a couple of statements over the last couple of days. I would refer you to those. They answer these questions, and I understand you're doing your job, but I'm going to go back to work now.
The woman who was targeted by this has been ruthlessly harassed by right-wingers and some journalists, and unlike Weiner, she issued a hearty denial. She highlighted how traumatic this whole thing has been. By doing so, she moved outlets like Gawker and the New York Times into saying that this is obviously a hoax. Most people are ready to believe at this point everything Andrew Breitbart says is a lie. So even though it's irritating, Weiner should have issued a definitive denial. His follow-up interview with Wolf Blitzer didn't help much since he was, while right about everything he said, unwilling to affirm or deny that he may have taken a picture like this at some point in time. That said, his assertions that he was hacked are believable. And so the dogs really should stop chewing the bone unless they can provide real evidence. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Blaming the Victims edition. Sean Hannity had some pro-abstinence lady named Rebecca St. James on his show to talk about Slut Walk. And even though both he and she swore up and down that they don't blame victims for rape, that's exactly what they did.
Purity and modesty go hand in hand. I think when a woman is dressing in an immodest way, in a provocative way, she's got to think about what is she saying by her dress. Because to a lot of guys, and I just wrote another book about it called What Is He Thinking? I interviewed these guys and they're saying,
one of them is absolutely disturbing. All right, but let me ask you this, but I want to stay specifically on this point.
They're asking for sex. They're asking
this
for sex if they're dressing
immodestly.
Women
are asking for sex by the way that they're dressed. Yes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So while she says that no one asked for rape, she's saying that a short skirt is consent. So how is that not saying that a woman asked to be raped? I'm unclear how a skirt can give consent. I believe only a woman can do that. This woman clearly wants to believe that because she's all virginal or whatever, she can't be raped. But anyone can be targeted if the rapist thinks he can get away with it.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.